This week on the Out of Chicago podcast, I interview landscape photographer and the author of The Photographer's Guide to the Oregon Coast, it's Rod Barbie. Well, welcome to the Out of Chicago podcast. I'm your host, Chris Smith, and this is the show where we connect you with your photography heroes, introduce you to amazing photo locations, and help you get the most out of your photography passion. We release a new episode every Thursday morning, so be sure to subscribe to the show. Back in May, Michelle and I flew out to Portland and drove out to the Oregon coast to scout the coast for our third annual landscape photography conference. Now, the Oregon coast is just phenomenal. The diversity of photographic subjects out there and just the epic nature of the coast itself. Along the way, we used The Photographer's Guide to the Oregon Coast, and that's co-authored by Rod Barbie and David Middleton. And today we have Rod Barbie on the podcast. He's going to be talking about his favorite places to shoot along the Oregon Coast. So let's get right into the interview. I'm here with our guest today. It's Rod Barbie. He is the author of The Photographer's Guide to the Oregon Coast, co-author with David Middleton, and he also leads tons of workshops throughout the West Coast and all over the place. We're going to hear about a couple of them, but we're mostly talking today about the Oregon coast. So welcome, Rod.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for coming on the podcast with us.
Sure.
So you're going to be one of our instructors at the third annual Out of Chicago Landscape Photography Conference. We went to Acadia National Park. We went to Moab this last October. And next October, we are going to the Oregon coast. And, you know, that's like what we try and do. We want to get the people that know the area better than anyone. And so who better than the guy that wrote the book on photographing the Oregon coast, but Rod Barbie. So we're going to talk today all about the Oregon coast. And let's just start with, you know, kind of some of your favorite places. Can you tell us what are some of your favorite places to photograph along the coast?
Well, one of them is Newport, where we're going to be. So I'll elaborate on that a little bit more later. But up and down the coast, there are so many places you can go and spend some time at, but just a few of my favorite places are the Bandon area, which is south, more south part of the coast. The Bandon, in general, Coos Bay area. Bandon Beach is incredible. People have probably seen pictures of that already with the sea stacks out there and incredible sunsets. But also nearby, just west of Coos Bay, are some really nice places. One of them is called Charleston Harbor, just a nice, tiny little harbor. And I love photographing harbors, so that's why it's one of my favorite spots. And then there's a state park out there called Shoreacre State Park. And the cool thing about that is it's got these amazing sandstone cliffs, and you walk out amongst that, and it's like you're in Utah or something, just the shapes, except you've got this big ocean right next to you at the same time. And you can get some big crashing waves if you're there at the right time of year. And there's a lot to do out there, and they've got this nice formal English garden. So if you're there in the spring or the summer, I've not been there in the fall yet to see what kind of colors come up, but in the spring and the summer, it's just beautiful. The Cape Perpetua area is a nice, one of my favorite spots too, and that's south of Newport. So I can elaborate on that a little bit later too.
But not too far. That'll be one of the places we'll go for our event. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot to do down there. Up and down the coast, I can't remember the number of lighthouses there were, like say 8 or 10 or something like that. Some of my favorite lighthouses are the Aquinna Head Lighthouse, which we'll be visiting in Newport. Cape Blanco Lighthouse, which is south of Bandon. It's another one of those big, tall lighthouses. And there's the Hasita Head Lighthouse, another one we'll be visiting, which is just north of Florence and about 45 minutes south of Newport. And that's the Hasita Head Lighthouse. I think I read somewhere that it was like the most photographed lighthouse on the West Coast.
I believe it. Yeah, it's really cool. And it's got a couple other little houses around it, right? And they're all like orangish red or something. Is that right? Am I thinking of the right one?
I don't remember that. They may have painted them since last time I was there, but I thought they were all kind of whitish.
It's mostly white. Yeah, maybe like a red roof or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not too close by it. I don't know that you can actually see them from the vantage point. But from the vantage point that's kind of curves around a little bay, you're looking down and you see the lighthouse with up just sitting there nestled in the cliff, and it's a pretty cool location.
Yeah, that was That was a lot of fun when we shot that, for sure. Yeah, it's just like just off the road, and then you're shooting over that bay, like you said, and the lighthouse on the other side of it, and the whole, I mean, it's not just a lighthouse, it's the whole coast that you're getting with it. That's what makes all this so special. It's, right. You know, such a dramatic coastline.
Yeah, so it, and you can get close to, there's a state park next to the lighthouse that encompasses the lighthouse, so you can get down to get close to it, or get up on the other side of it and shoot towards the south. So there's some little way trails back there that they probably actually don't want you to go on, but pictures from that area.
Yeah, I think Nick Page was showing us some photos. He's like, all right, so these are my favorite photos there, but I don't think we're allowed to take any groups there. You're not really supposed to be back there. I'm like, okay, all right.
Yeah, there's some places along the coast that I'd be leery about taking groups to, just because of the danger aspect of surf coming in.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So, I mean, let's just throw it in right now. Do you have tips for that? I mean, you're getting out, and, you know, the waves are crashing up near your feet, or you're just barely getting in the water or whatever. You never know when there's going to be like the rogue wave or the sneaker wave or whatever they call it, right? So, yeah, I mean, just always be looking.
I won't, just because of liability reasons, I really won't bring groups out into places like that. I would offer tips for people who wanted to go, you know, try that. It's just, keep your eye on the water, be real cognizant of what's going on around you, and just if it feels iffy, don't do it.
Yeah. The one area is like the Thor as well, that whole area around there, right, is maybe the most dangerous. But that's a place that people can go shoot on their own, but we probably won't actually take groups down there. But
yeah, you can get close to it with a, not super close to it, but you can go down towards it with a group, I suppose, and photograph it from a distance. But all those great shots are when you're right down on top of it. And yeah, I've heard too many stories about people getting knocked over.
So we were talking about some of your favorite places up and down the coast, and we've talked about some of them down south. Let's talk about some more north, and just if people are interested in joining us next year in October, just so you guys know, we've got 5 days. It's October 13th through the 17th, where we're going to be based out of Newport, Oregon, and we're going to hit areas close to there, but it's like 3-4 hours, whatever, from Bandon. It's 3-4 hours to Cannon Beach, or even more, I don't know, to go north. So so there's no way we could go there in a day and come back and fit that into our event. But we're going to offer some extra workshops. It might be a day or two beforehand or a day or two after. Or if you just want to go off on your own and you've come all the way out to the Oregon coast and you want to hit some of these places, that's why I wanted to run down a couple of these other favorite places. So what do you got north of Newport, Rod?
Well, on the coast, if you go all the way north to Astoria.
Yeah, that's what I hear a lot of people talking about that, yeah.
They've got the Astoria Column, they call it. It's at the high point. You can go up there, pretty good view of Astoria. There's the bridge. My favorite place in Astoria is the Maritime Museum. And when I was working on that book, I went in there, figured I'll just go spend half hour, 45 minutes in there just checking it out. I was in there for 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, wow. Shooting? Or just looking at stuff?
Well, mainly because it's fascinating, just looking at stuff. So, yeah, and you can shoot in there. They don't mind tripods in there, and I did a bunch of stuff in there, and it was fun. But if you're into boats, ships, maritime stuff, it's just fascinating. So I had a really good time. And then they have some displays outside, too, the light ship, a couple other things. So that can be done. And just near Astoria is Fort Stevens. Yeah, Fort Stevens State Park. There's an old shipwreck out there. Then, like, south of that is, you get towards Ecola State Park, Cannon Beach, Eastside. Those are all pretty nice areas. Ecola State Park looking is north, a little bit north of Cannon Beach. You get this view with the coastline curving away towards Cannon Beach. And Ecola State Park's got a lot of neat stuff just on its own. So there's a lot of stuff you can do, you know, from Cannon Beach on north.
Right. Right. So that's what we're looking at doing, you know, take a day or two after our event and go up to that area, do Cannon Beach, Ecola State Park, or maybe even, you know, some other groups. Well, some groups will do like Bandon Beach and that. Actually, you mentioned another place to me before we started recording here, Silver Falls State Park. That's not north, but...
It is a little bit north of Newport, technically, but it's east of Salem. Salem's along the I-5 corridor, so it's east of Salem. And so you can stay in Salem, and it's about a 20-25 minute drive into Silver Falls State Park. And Silver Falls is, I think, it's the biggest state park in Oregon. It's their best state park. And I think it could even be a national park if it really had ambition. It's just beautiful. There's it's a good sized park with trails, but the main trail is called the Trail of 10 Falls, and it goes by 10 waterfalls. Five of them of which are pretty decent to photograph. The other five are just, you know, I've seen them, but they're hard to get a decent angle, decent view. But with fall color around them, you can work the streams. But it's a beautiful park, and you could shoot it in a day or two pretty easily. You don't have to hike the whole trail to get to all the falls. There's access points. So the longest hike you'd ever have to do to get to any of them is going to be like maybe a mile and a half each way.
Mm-hmm.
Go down, and then they do come back up. So you got some elevation loss and elevation gain. So anybody in decent shape can do it. If you have trouble with balance, if you can remember the 60s, you might not want to go there. You might be beyond your age, but if you've kept yourself in decent shape, you can do it. But it's just a beautiful park. And I'm going to try to schedule a trip right before our Newport trip, and then come on down to Newport after that. But I think any time in the middle of October would be pretty good there.
Yeah, as far as color and stuff, right? Sounds like it'd be perfect. Yeah. Yeah. So much to do around there. I mean, if you fly into Portland, even that, you know, you could do like the Japanese garden that's there. There's so many. Yeah. Or go the other way. And I don't know what the state of it is now, but what am I trying to say? Where they had all the fires.
Oh, yeah. The Columbia River Gorge. Yeah. That's kind of not going to be good for a number. Probably, I don't know if I'll see it again in my lifetime.
Yeah, that's so sad. But I think there's still some areas that are good.
A couple waterfalls that are good there at the west end, and then there's waterfalls across the river in Washington.
Right,
not as easy to get to. Maybe they're not hard to get to, but they're not as easy as just driving up and down the road. But yeah, that was infuriating.
I know. Yeah. So yeah, that's really sad, but so many great places to photograph in that area if you come out that way. How about let's talk about Newport. So we want a basis. In your book, you guys said that if you could pick just one spot and photograph, you know, and just stay there the whole time, that it would be that Newport area. So let's talk about a few of the places that that we'll take people out to photograph around the Newport area. You mentioned a couple of them, a couple of lighthouses and stuff, but what else do you like there?
Yeah, I think Newport probably has some of the greatest diversity as far as places to stay, places to eat, places to photograph, and the Highway 101 is just right there, so you can get to places pretty easily. My very favorite place in Newport is the harbor.
Right? The harbor itself, like we were talking about with the bridge and
the bridge,
crab pots and all that. Yeah.
Crab pots, the nets, it's a lot of fun. My second favorite place might be the aquarium in Newport. They have an awesome aquarium.
Let's talk about that, because we've been working with them, and we'll send some groups there. What are some of your favorite things to photograph at the aquarium? Because I was super surprised how awesome it was when we went.
Puffins, you can get some, because the displays there are really natural looking, and you can get some really good close-up pictures of puffins.
Because I was seeing your shots in the book and of the puffins, and there's the one close up. I'm like, I didn't even know this was a place to do that. And then to find out that it's at the aquarium, but the setup that they have for it is awesome. So, you know, usually you think to go photograph puffins like that, you've got to take this, you know, big adventure, take a whole week to get out to a location. But like, we'll squeeze this in, you know, in the morning you'll be shooting the sunrise, and we'll go photograph puffins for a couple hours, and then you're off to do other things, you know, in our event. So, I mean, how awesome is that to just squeeze that in the middle of all this other stuff and not have to take a huge trip to do it?
Yeah, and you can do something like that with like a 24 to 120 lens, or maybe a 70 to 200. I've got a 28 to 300 that works great for just about anything. And it focuses really close, because those things come really close to you.
right. Yeah, Michelle and I did it. It was crazy. Like, and then they'd want to pose. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. But the whole aquarium was really cool. All the different exhibits. And then they had like the tunnel that goes underwater, and the sharks are swimming over you. And it was pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So
I've shot in there before. That's kind of cool. You know, you set up a tripod and you can do video in there, people moving around, or just if there's not anybody in there, which in the summer is kind of rare, but in October it might not be all that busy.
Yeah, no, that's
pretty cool.
That's what I was trying to do with some video in there, just like you said. And I was trying to wait for people to leave, but but yeah, but it's so cool to see all the movement of it. Or, you know, you see those great shots of, you know, from divers where they're underwater looking up and you can see the sun, you know, coming through the surface, but then you see the silhouette of the shark and it's like, man, I'd love to do that, but I don't want to swim with sharks. You get like almost the exact same picture in this without having to risk your life. It's really interesting. So yeah, the aquarium itself is really cool. And that's super close to where we're hosting the whole event. So
yeah, you can photograph seals swimming underwater. How cool.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And just the way the lighting is there, you actually can get decent shots. It's not like it's all reflections and everything. I don't know what the key is to that, but you really could get some cool pictures in there.
Yeah, just get close to the glass, basically. Inside the tunnel, the passages of the deep, you're not getting close to the glass. So you might get some reflections of people in there, but it's not a big deal because everybody's going to be going, wow, look at those sharks and stuff.
Right. And then they have like tanks with like the tidal pools and, you know, all those things you can get super close to. Sea anemones, the sea stars. Am I saying that right?
Urchins and all sorts of, that's probably the best place on the coast to do tide pool photography.
is the aquarium.
Stand there and do it. You don't have to get down on your knees and, you know,
right, because those tide pools are actually like elevated. They're like a few feet up off the ground, right? You don't even have to, get down on the ground for it. But we
watch the water. You don't have to watch your back for water coming up.
Right, there's a wave coming. Yeah. But we will see that stuff when we go out. I think one of the places is by that Yaquina Head. They have an area where you can walk down. And when we were there, there was like scientists actually like scoping out the area and taking counts of the things in the tide pools during low tide. But is that something you've done much of, to go out into the tide pools itself?
I've done it in the past. I haven't done it lately. You know, here up in Northwest Washington, we've got a lot of that too. So I used to go out, and there used to be a place near Port Angeles that I would go to that would be really great sea creatures. The problem is probably about the last decade, it's been harder and harder to find. They've been either going farther out. The water's been getting probably warmer, diseases. So,
There was something about with the sea stars, like a wasting disease or something like that. Yeah. I heard that just this past year, they've been coming back and it's getting better. So I don't know.
Because it used to be you go out there and they were all over the place. And then they got to be where you have to start searching for them. And tide pools are in general in a place that doesn't have very good footing. Slippery areas, hard rock, sometimes lava rock. So they can be uncomfortable places to be in. So
right.
Going out to the aquarium and being able to shoot just standing there and in a nice warm area.
Yeah. And it's a lot easier to teach too, because I mean, each of these things that we'll be leading out there will have the professional photographers with people. And mm-hmm. So it's like, hey, try this, try that, use a polarizer, you know, whatever tips. It's a whole lot easier than to everyone go out down on the beach and try and do it. So a good learning experience too.
Right. Yeah. So the aquarium's great. I think people will really like it a lot. It's been one of my favorite place just about every time I go down there. Well, every time I go down there, I go to the aquarium.
Yeah, and it's yeah.
And they got a little cafe in there and a gift store. So,
I went and we met with the people that run their events, and we're trying to set up like a private event. So it's just us, you know, and I think usually they don't let you use tripods, but I think that's right. But they had talked about, you know, if we were to do this private event before it opened early in the morning, that they'd let us do that.
They may have changed, because I haven't been there in 3 or 4 years, but we've never had problems bringing tripods in. But maybe thinking of a group of, you know, a large group of people with tripods too. I usually just bring not more than 10 or 12 people at a time.
So you've actually led your workshop groups to the aquarium when you've gone?
Yeah. We used to be able to get in before the aquarium opened. They used to let us in an hour ahead, and then they changed some policies a few years ago to where we could come in. They had no problem with us coming in, but we couldn't come in until they opened. So,
Okay.
I don't know, different directors or, you know.
We're going to work it out with them. We're going to get in there early.
As long as they didn't mind us coming in, I didn't care, because we're just going in and having a good time anyway.
Right, for sure. You know what? The other great thing about Newport is it's a great city. It has great restaurants. Like you said, it's close to the highway or whatever to get to places, but like I said, just hanging out in Newport is pretty cool. What are some of your favorite like restaurants in Newport? Like we got to grab dinner at night, whatever.
I think I told you before we were just said that I'm kind of a Subway guy. They got a lot of grocery stores, but probably if you like seafood, Newport's a good place. There's a place right in the harbor called Local Ocean, and it's always popular. I've eaten there a couple times. It's always been good. In the summer, it's hard to get in, but in October, it might not be so hard. There's other places like Moe's Chowder House, kind of famous up and down the coast. And there's another chowder house in Newport. There's a ton of places in Newport.
Yeah, and the Rogue Brewery is right there too, right? If you like to drink beer, the Rogue Brewery is right there, and they have a restaurant as well, and you can try all the different beers. And the Rogue Dead Guy is kind of the famous one that you can find all over the place. But that's where they're based.
Oh, there's a cool place in it's called Canyon Way Bookstore.
Okay,
really, it's near the harbor. It's just up from the harbor a little bit, called Canyon Way Bookstore and Restaurant. So you can go in there and you can have breakfast, lunch. I don't remember if they do dinner or not, but it's a bookstore too, so it's hard to beat.
Interesting. All right, so all those places to check out. And so we'll be doing a group dinner together for our thing when we get there the opening night, but the other nights you'll get to go out with the other photographers, with some of the instructors, and go have a small group dinner at any of these places. So that's what makes it work out so well, is that we've got lots of places people can go to. How about if someone's taking their own trip to the coast? What's the best time to come to the Oregon coast? Best time of year?
That kind of depends on what you're looking for. I think the Oregon coast could be good any time of the year. If you want to do crashing waves, dramatic ocean scenery stuff, then winter. And you may look for a time when you get a high tide or a storm. And in the winter, there's storms every other day, it seems like. But especially a place like down at Shore Acres that I mentioned earlier, there's a cliff there, and I've seen pictures with these waves that are towering above the tiny little people at the top of the cliffs.
Oh, wow.
But you need kind of a storm surge for something like that. So the winter's good. The summer is more crowded, but then you're going to have probably better weather if you're more interested in not getting yourself soaking wet.
But maybe not so good for the photography, at least that was because of fog, possibly. Like that was our thought.
Yeah, we would do our workshops in late July, and we would generally have pretty good luck. We'd have fog in the morning, and then the rest of the day was pretty good. Sunsets were always a crapshoot, just because you get the marine layer, offshore marine layer, and the sun would often go down right into that. The spring could be good. I think more up north, maybe some down south, rhododendrons along the road. It's not as, you know, like a place like the Redwoods are really known for rhododendrons. So you could find those, but really any time of year, like I mentioned, October is sort of thought of as a good time for sunsets, apparently.
Right. I think that if it's really all about landscape photography, that October is the time. And that was kind of the thinking behind doing October. And then there's other areas, and maybe there's some color, you know, like we said, the Silver Falls and other things. So,
yeah, so. And then it kind of depends. I mean, some specific locations might be better sometime part of the year than another, just because of where the sun is setting and where you find on with rock formations or arches and or holes in the rocks.
right.
That takes a little bit of scouting, though, and being familiar with the area and getting out there with a compass and kind of knowing where the sun's going to be going down a certain time of year so you can get yourself placed. But
Right.
Generally, I can't think of a bad time of year to go. I mean, you might go out there in winter and just not be able to get out at all because of storms. So winter might be the worst time to go, but it could be pretty amazing, too.
Yeah, and like you said about shooting in the fog, I mean, you just make the best of your conditions. You know, it's like if it's super foggy, you're like, well, geez, this is a great time to get that shot with all the fog, or, you know, with boats in it, or, you know, I mean, you just go with what you're given. And I think that's important with landscape and travel photography. You take what you've got and you make the most of it.
Yeah. And there are some places along the coast, down by Florence is a place called inland from Florence is Sweet Creek. And anytime you go, if you have fog on the coast, you go inland and you get out of the fog. And Sweet Creek is kind of a neat stream photography. There's neat formations in the bed of the stream. And there's places like that all up and down the coast. And I got a lot of them mentioned in the book. If you're up north on the coast a little bit, you could go, especially in October, you can go inland, say north of Lincoln City and up in that way, go inland into the Willamette Valley. And there you've got wineries, a ton of wine. And in October, they're going to be beautiful with the fall color.
Oh, yeah, that would be really cool.
Used to do some photo tours up there, Willamette Valley wineries, and which was kind of fun because we get there early in the morning. We'd arrange to get into places real early for sunrise, and we photograph for a couple hours, and the tasting rooms open at about 10 or 11.
That sounds perfect to me.
And then we taste maybe someplace, then go another place for lunch and taste there, and then go have a, take a break, and then go to a nice dinner in the afternoon.
Oh man, we might have to have you lead that one after our thing. That sounds perfect. I love it. That sounds great. You know, I should have mentioned, the book, The Photographer's Guide to the Oregon Coast. You wrote it with David Middleton, but it's available on Amazon, and people can. I mean, that's what I did. I'm like, I gotta check it all out, and now I'm here talking with you. But
if you want autographed copies, you can go to my website and order it there.
Oh, okay, even better. And what's your website?
It's just rodbarbee.com, RODBARBEE.com.
Perfect. So you go there. I'm going to have to bring this one with us so I can get this one autographed. How's that sound? Right? I mean, I'll have to bring it anyway to make sure we're hitting all the best spots. But, let's talk about maybe like your favorite tips for people. You know, a lot of these people are used to photographing, out in the woods and, we've got like the rainforest there and everything. But like when you're photographing on the coast, what are some tips that you have for people? And what are some of the things that you'll be teaching at the event?
I think of it in two categories. One is that technical part of using the camera, and the other is the part of seeing and composition. Using the camera on the coast, you've got a few things to look out for. You got wind, you got blowing sand, blowing salt spray. You got a tripod on the sand, and if you're close to the shore, then when the water comes in, your tripod shifts.
Right, uh-huh.
All sorts of things like that just to keep in mind. And when it's windy, I hate photographing in the wind just because it's hard to get sharp images and you got wind blowing through your eyes, but sometimes you got to do it. And so when it's windy, I try to add a little extra weight to the tripod. And I just do that by using my own body weight and lean into it, which dampens vibrations.
Interesting. Okay. You actually lean against it, kind of put your weight on to, pushing it down into the into the sand. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, whatever surface you're on for wind, sand or just gravel or whatever you happen to be on. I don't particularly like hanging something from a tripod as weight, unless it can go all the way to the ground, because if you have something hanging on the tripod and it's blowing in the wind, it's moving.
It's swinging, yeah. It's like you just made a sail for your tripod. Right. That's not what we want. Yeah, exactly.
That's how I ballast my tripod, just by simply leaning into it.
Okay, interesting.
Hope for the best. If you got a long telephoto lens out there, it's going to act like a sail no matter what. And
so all right.
Just have to have those high shutter speeds that will, stop the motion. And if you're trying to capture motion, that makes it a little bit tough. So,
yeah,
that trade off.
Yeah, and we'll do more of these videos with some of the other instructors in that too. More of these. We probably will do some videos ahead of time where we talk. I'll talk with some of the other instructors, and what's the exact equipment that we want, and what things do we need to have so that we're prepared when we go out there. Mm-hmm. But maybe just real quick, a couple of things that people want to bring with them. Because they're shooting right on the ocean. There's the sea spray and all that other stuff, right?
Yeah. If you use protective filters, you probably want to have those handy, just because if it's blowing salty wind in the salt, or salt in the wind, you're going to get it on your lens. You'll see it on your windshield. If you see it happening on your windshield, it's going to be happening on your camera probably. So I always keep a lookout on my lens. I often put a filter on there, mainly a polarizing filter, because but the polarizer comes in handy a lot on the coast, no matter what. And I'll just look at it every once in a while. If it's starting to get a film on it, I will using my microfiber cloth and clean it off and keep on going and hope for the best.
Right.
So there's those. Other filters I would really highly recommend on the coast are there's two. There's a graduated neutral density filters. Because if you're out there for sunrise or sunset, then your foreground is going to be darker than your background, usually, if you're using a foreground. So you can use a graduated filter or a set of them, or you can do the high dynamic range, the HDR thing, where you take several shots and blend them later. My personal preference for doing HDR is to take two shots and then blend them manually in Photoshop. I find that I get much more natural looks.
Rather than throwing them into a HDR software or whatever. Yeah, just do it right in Photoshop or whatever you use. And
yeah, that works great for if you just got two shots. You know, you get one for the foreground, one for the background. Optimize each for each area and then blend them up in Photoshop. That works really, really well. If you've got more, like three, four, or five, then one of these HDR programs is probably the way to go. And there's a ton of them out there.
There are, yeah. But I think you're right. I think that most of the instructors that I've seen that we've had will do it manually. And I think they kind of do the same thing for focus stacking too. You know, take a shot focused on the real close foreground, middle ground, and background and put them together that way too. So a lot of that going on with our landscape photography for sure.
Yeah. The other filter I think people might like to have is just a straight neutral density filter.
Right. Cool.
Expanding the time, you know, get these longer exposures so you can get that silky water with the waves
or
the right time that you want to have them. So I like those pictures where you got sea stacks and I don't know, minute, 2 minute long exposures and there's just like a cloud of water at the base of the sea stacks.
Right. So we'll do that when we go out there. We'll have, you know, the in the field teaching sessions that are designed for specific techniques. So it'll say in there, you know, make sure you have like a 10 stop neutral density filter or whatever. And we're going to practice doing some of that and we'll go to the right places that will be really good with the C stacks. And so if you're interested in that type of a thing, it's not just like, yeah, let's just try it. It's no, we're going to work on that together when we're out there and we're all going to try it together. Because sometimes settings and things like that when you're doing that are a little, if you've never done it before, is a little tricky. So that's the type of thing why it's nice to be out there with the instructor.
One of the locations we'll go to is Seal Rock State Park.
I knew it. Yep.
Perfect spot for that. You can do it down on the beach. You can do it from the trail up above. That same thing, the long exposures and getting the waves that are becoming misty around the sea stacks.
Right. And it's got really interesting rocks up on the beach. Maybe not even rocks, but like the lava type, but like the foregrounds you can get there are super interesting.
Yeah. Sometimes I've been there in years where there's a sandstone foreground. It's just really, really great. And then other years storms come in and it's completely covered with sand.
So every year. Gotcha. Yeah. But I heard it's going to be really good for our thing next year. Yeah.
it's a good spot. And you can photograph it from down on the beach. There's a viewpoint from up above. So you can look down on all these sea stacks with a telephoto. It's just a pretty versatile place to go to.
Yeah.
A lot of room out there for everybody too.
Awesome. So, you'll be leading groups out to these locations, but you're also going to teach a class or two. What are you going to be teaching in these classes, do you think?
Well, I was thinking about teaching, something that has really, really helped me out in the past when, you know, I kind of get stuck photographing. And because a lot of us go out there and we're looking for things to photograph. We're looking for trees. We're looking for mountains. We're looking for sea stacks. We're looking piles of nets or something like that. And I found that I can discover many more things to photograph if I kind of put aside what the thing is and look for graphics like curves and triangles and circles and shapes and
right. So it doesn't
try to teach people, you know, look through their viewfinder and say, well, this is great, but look, you've got this really great curve, why don't you use that? And stop thinking about I'm photographing a river to a mountain and think I'm photographing this curve leading up to the mountain.
Right, because we're not there necessarily to document what we see. We're there to create a piece of artwork, really. Right? So don't think, okay, this is going to go on the cover of something to advertise the area. It's like, no, this is something that someone might want to put on their wall or whatever it might be. But it doesn't need to be a perfect representation of the thing. It's more about creating that art, like you said.
Oh, and on the coast too, you could use a telephoto lens and just look at shapes on the sand or shapes in the sea stacks, and to the point where nobody knows what it is, except they know that they just like what they see.
Right.
Okay. And to that end, there's one thing I try to teach people when they're out there looking through their viewfinder, trying to set up a picture, is to, a couple things you can do. I use a depth of field preview button a ton. I use that a lot. A lot of people don't use that too much anymore. And what I'll do is I'll set it at to say 16 or 22. And when you push the button, what happens is the viewfinder gets really dark. And it gets rid of all the detail in the picture, and what you're left with are just shapes. And So I push the button, or you can squint your eyes. Squinting your eyes does the exact same thing. And you can just see these shapes out there, and you just move your camera and arrange these shapes in a pleasing manner. And what it does, a couple things, it shows you the shapes, and you're working just with the shapes. And it also helps in balancing out a picture, because it's really easy to see that, wow, there's a lot of stuff over here on the right, but there's hardly anything on the left. And you could just move the camera until it feels good. And there's no rules here with composition or anything. It just do what feels good.
Right. Yeah. Just adjust it until it's like, okay, that's right there. Yeah. I like that idea. Go ahead.
Oh, I first did that when I was in Canyonlands National Park at one of the overlooks. And towards sunset, you got all this light and shadow, and it can get really jumbled. And take a picture that just makes no sense. And I push the preview button, and then I just see light and shadow and nothing. And I don't see any details in the canyons. So I don't care about including that. I just want to make the shapes work.
Right. Yeah, I think some people get so obsessed with like the sharpness or just looking at little details in their picture, but it's so important that when people see a picture for the first time that they have an immediate, like really positive reaction. And that whole squinting technique, or I'll have to try it with a depth of field preview, is a really good idea, because it's like, you, even if you saw it from far away, you'd want people to go, whoa, that looks kind of cool. Mm-hmm. You don't want them to have to spend a few minutes. They're not going to eventually go, oh, okay, that is good. Like, you just want that immediate impact. And that's what helps do that, I think.
And what helps with that too is everybody tends to, and I still do it myself. I've been photographing for 25 years or more, and I'll still do this myself, is I want to include more things. It's like, oh, there's this neat red flower out there. Let's back up it. Oh, there's another one. And pretty soon you're going wide, and the thing you like to begin with, whatever it was you stopped to photograph, is lost in all this other stuff.
Right.
I try to go, okay, what did I really like about this location or this scene? And then I just, using that technique of squinting or the depth of field preview button, I can just narrow it down to just that. So it kind of helps with discipline too. It's like,
I like,
this is what I'm going to photograph. This is the story I want to tell.
Right. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like the Stephen King quote where he talks about like kill your darlings, where it's like, you know, it might've been a favorite part in your novel, but like it actually is distracting from the rest of it or something like that. It's like, okay, so I love that one extra thing that was in there, but it's actually taking away, you know, 100 great things isn't going to make, you know, the photo any better. You just got to concentrate on just what's the most important part.
My friend Dave Middleton, who is an excellent workshop instructor, I've learned more from him than from anybody else. He has a saying. He says, a good photograph is, how does it go? He says, a bad photograph is a paragraph. A good photograph is a sentence. A great photograph is a phrase. But you look at something, you get a phrase in your mind of what you want to photograph. Curve in a limb or something like that. Well, this is what you liked about it. Photograph just that.
Right. Oh, I love that. So the best part about what we're going to be doing is that we're going to be in the classroom learning from these instructors like you. Then you're going to take us out. You know the areas better than anyone. We're going to go to the areas together. But then we're also going to come back and either later that day or the next day have time for critique to say, you know, I know you tried to do this with your long exposure. Next time, try this or whatever. Or there, you nailed it. And so, you know, we're going to have that full, you know, learn, go try it, and get some feedback on it too. So
yeah, and if people have not participated in critiques before, at first they're going to be a little nervous. You're invested in your own pictures, but you try to step back from that and pay attention to all the other critiques that go on, because when yours comes up, everything just kind of goes out of your head anyway. But you're going to learn probably more in the critiques than any other part of the workshop, I think. For a couple of reasons, you're going to see what other people did. and mm-hmm. you're going to get ideas. And then you're going to hear about how you can make those pictures better. And so it puts little bugs in your mind about the next time you're in that situation, like, oh yeah, Rod said this. I thought he was stupid for saying that. At the that works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I get it now.
And so critiques are great. And I learned from just being, critiquing other people's pictures. I learn a lot and I get a lot of good ideas. So I steal a lot of ideas from other people.
Steal like an artist, of course. Uh-huh.
That's a great one. I get to come out here every year. I'm going to remember that next year. And I'm going to go.
Exactly. Yeah.
But they're fun. And some people, it can be nerve wracking. They've just got to realize that, at least when I critique, I just want to come from the point of view that this is what could be done to make it better for the next time you're in a situation. I don't care if taking that step to the right, which would have made a better composition, would have plunged you to your death. I mean, I didn't care about that. I don't want anybody doing that. But I don't care that that's your excuse for not doing it. I'm just saying, here's what would have made it better. And next time, think about a different perspective. And if you can't get it because you were plunged to your death, then don't plunge to your death.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. That's what people always want to do when you're doing critiques is that, well, I couldn't do it because of this and this and this and all, but yeah, like you said, next time you get a chance in that situation, see if you can. That's why it would make it better. Yeah.
That's okay. That's nice. I don't care about that right now.
All right. So this has been great. I'm super excited to have you with us next October, October 13th through the 17th in Newport, Oregon. We're going to be teaching, going out and shooting, doing the aquarium, all those things, and then coming back and doing critique as well. We're going to have, I haven't settled on the final number, but 15 to 20 different instructors. It's going to be a pretty big event. And we actually already have quite a few people. We're almost half full on the thing, and we haven't even opened it to the public. That's just from the people that signed up from when we were in Moab this past October. So yeah, it's going to be a real exciting event. It's going to be a great group. It's always a great group of people, really, really good photographers. So many of them that are out there shooting. It's like, man, you should be teaching. I'm glad you came.
That's another thing about workshops is you often learn a lot just from your fellow participants.
Absolutely.
Year they've got, an app they use, a place they've been.
Right.
Or you just made a friend for life, too. That's it. I know a lot of people have made some really good friendships from these workshops.
Exactly. And one fun thing, is just, how many opportunities do you have to be, with a bigger thing like we have to be in the same room with, 100, 150 people? They're all just as passionate about photography as you are, Usually you're on vacation or something and it's like, oh man, my wife's going to kill me if I get out and shoot for more than 5 minutes. But no, that's what everybody here wants to do. So, yeah.
I know.
Usually
the only time constraint we have when we're out photographing on these kind of things is somebody will say, I hear breakfast calling me or something.
Yes. I am. You said you're a big Subway guy. I'm a big pancake guy. So yeah, sometimes that's me.
But going back from what you were saying about being in a big group of like-minded people, nobody's going to hurry you up while you're taking a shot. If you want to work that location,
we get it. Yeah. We know why. Yeah. We know that's why you're here. Yeah, exactly. So
almost always, you work a spot, you try a different position and you work down to exactly what you wanted to do in the first place. Only you didn't know it because you hadn't gotten there yet. And so that last shot that often is the best one. And if you're hurried up, you're never going to get it. So
yeah, I won't rush anyone trying to get to the pancakes. I apologize for sure. All right. So if people want to, let's finish by saying that you do a lot of your own workshops. And I know you do a lot, do them along the coast. You're up near Port Angeles, near the Olympic National Park.
Yeah.
But you also have been doing workshops up in Yellowknife. Is that right? Tell us about all these things.
Yellowknife is the capital of the Northwest Territories in Canada. And it's way, way, way up there in the north. And what's cool about Yellowknife is it sits right smack dab in the middle of the auroral oval. Aurora, where aurora borealises tend to display themselves. And the topography there is such that you get a lot of clear nights. And Yellowknife, I think the statistics were that it's like 240 nights out of the year you can see an aurora.
Oh, wow.
And
that's crazy.
Yeah, considering that's including, you know, it's including summer too.
Right. Yeah, good point.
Yeah. Wow. So I usually go there in September. I just, you know, take a look at what the moon is doing and go when the moon's going to be dark. And I go there in September for a couple of reasons. One, it's really good for auroras and the temperatures are real pleasant then. It doesn't get too cold. And the fall color is pretty darn good. So you can photograph fall color during the day and auroras at night.
And you say you go up there, but you're taking groups up there to shoot, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been leading tours up there the last 5 years, I guess it's been. I've done it 5 times now.
And have there been any times you've gone up there and spent a significant amount of time and no auroras?
Never.
Yeah. Never. Yeah. That's awesome.
We, this last trip, we was a little different than others in that it was earlier in September and it was a lot colder than it's usually been, which was ended up being great at the end of the week when the fall color had turned because of that. But we had a little bit more cloud cover and rain this time too.
Okay.
That being said, we had out of the 6 nights there, I think we went out 5 nights. And one of those nights we got kind of skunked, but the other 4 we saw auroras. And so 2 or 3 of those we saw really good auroras.
Mm.
You go up there and you spend, you know, 5 or 6 nights there, you're going to have a chance to see auroras.
When you do those, do you move around to different locations or are you kind of like, you know, let's go to one spot for the night and hope we find something good? Or do you always go to the same spot or are there different things you're looking for in your foreground?
For foregrounds there, we're going to be by lakesides. So we have reflections for the foreground.
Oh, yeah.
And other places we can use silhouettes of trees against the sky. Generally, we will go to one spot and stay there for the night. This past year, we would go to one spot, and just because clouds were around, we might not have luck there, so we would drive back to hopefully a spot that didn't have as many clouds. Not that far away, but it still seemed to work. You know, we would drive 20, 30 minutes back to another spot, and the clouds are breaking up. So, but in general, we'll just go to one spot and spend the night there, and it's interesting. You get there, nothing's happening. You just have to wait and wait and wait and wait. Sometimes maybe it'll start at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. Sometimes you wait and it starts at 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock. And often it's well worth waiting for. Sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
The storms come up and they're difficult to photograph unless you've done it before because you're just awestruck.
Right. You just want to look at it, right?
Heck with a camera. I just want to watch this.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I went to Iceland with a couple of our participants from Acadia, Donnie and Paul, and we rented a van and we were driving through Iceland and we would drive at night and it was like, you never know what you might see. And then all of a sudden, you know, Donnie would be like, lights, he just screamed off the side of the road and we're just shooting all the aurora. It was awesome. So,
yeah, I was there a few weeks ago and we got skunked on auroras. It was too cloudy. We could see the color glowing through some clouds a couple times, but it was just too cloudy to see anything.
I think they have a couple other interesting things to photograph in Iceland too, maybe. So, yeah. So I think it was still worth the trip, I'm sure. Oh, man. Wow. Well, this has been awesome. If people want to come find out about your workshops and see your photographs, and like you said, we could get the book, they can go to rodbarbee.com. Is that right? .com. RODBARBEE.com.
I do put out a monthly newsletter and people can sign up for the newsletter there. And it just talks about the workshops coming up. Maybe a few tips here and there and the ongoing saga of our house remodeling. And
oh, exciting.
It's
No, that's great. So just go to rodbarbee.com and all the links are there. Anything you'd want to find. And go to outofchicago.com to find out more information about our out of, you know what, here, I'll just say this because I don't know what the right answer is. We're going to Newport, Oregon. Should it be called Out of Newport or should it be called Out of Oregon? Because I've done both. Or should it be called Out of the Oregon Coast? I have no idea. Give me your thoughts. You're on the spot. I probably need to delete this, but what do you think, Rod? Tell
out
us.
Out of Chicago into Newport.
Into Newport. I don't know. See, all the other ones were out of. We did out of Acadia, out of Moab, out of, you know, so I don't know.
Out of the Oregon coast, I guess.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, very good. Thanks for spending so much of your day here with me. Sure. And can't wait to see you in Oregon. And Yeah, I'll still be reading your book. I can't wait. So
looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. All right. Thank you so much, Rod. And we'll talk soon.
Nice talking to you, Chris.
Yeah. All right. Bye-bye. Well, thank you very much to Rod Barbie. Can't wait to hang out with him next year on the Oregon coast, to shoot alongside him and to shoot alongside you guys. It's going to be a great adventure. Can't wait. Now, if you're listening to this Thanksgiving weekend, over the weekend, make sure you're a part of our Out of Chicago email list. If you're on the email list, we're going to be sending some great Black Friday deals and Cyber Monday deals. So make sure that you're on that list to really keep up with everything we got going on. So to get on that list, go to outofchicago.com. You'll see links there. And you'll see links to all of our upcoming events too, including Out of Oregon or whatever it is. Out of Oregon. Yeah, that's it. So I hope to see you soon. And like I said, we're going to do a new podcast episode every Thursday. So look for it, subscribe to the podcast, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.